There is a reason why we call grand opera grand. Sumptuous orchestrations, soaring melodies, stories which tell of love, sacrifice and patriotism, intrigue, jealousies, and maybe redemption, lavish sets and costumes, and a sweep and arc of music and story that lifts, ennobles, and possibly edifies without moralizing or preaching. Germany may have had Richard Wagner and his music dramas, but Italy had Giuseppe Verdi, and the world still reveres his works today. Giuseppe Verdi, whose life spanned 1813 to 1901, was born the same year as Richard Wagner. And while it can be said that there was some influence by Wagner in some of Verdi's later works, Verdi was a true original. And his operas were premiered over a successful 50-year period, from his first true success, Nabucco, in 1842, to his last opera, Falstaff, in 1893. And in that span of years, he produced so many dramatic compositions, keeping his one comedy until the end, that one marvels at the high level of composition. Nabucco, Ernani, Attila, Macbeth, Louisa Miller, Rigoletto, Il Trovatore, La Traviata, Le Vespri Sicilienne, Simone Boccanegra, Un Ballo in Maschera, La Forza del Destino, Don Carlos, Aida, Otello, and Falstaff. One becomes breathless just reciting the names. If we look at 19th century opera as a huge structure held up by columns, one major column bearing the weight would be the music dramas of Richard Wagner, and the other would be the grand operas of Giuseppe Verdi. They were as different from each other as were the languages spoken by each composer. They differed greatly as to compositional style and melodic construction. Wagner exploiting endless melody and declamatory vocal technique. Verdi with set arias and ensembles, melodies which appear simple, but are riveting examples of passionate expression. As to harmony, Wagner was the adventurer, writing compositions in which the emotional release of harmonic tension was delayed as long as possible. And as to the storyline, the plots, Wagner was epic in scope, choosing the Teutonic gods and goddesses, the epic heroes of Germanic legend and Arthurian romance. Verdi's operas were dramatic, but with a lowercase d, emphasizing human drama, human emotion, human success and failure, human love, and human jealousy. Each composer had his followers, and while it may have seemed as if they resented each other's success, they placed themselves above the fray, and it was their followers who waged the battle, a battle which in reality could never be won by either side. Determining which is better would be like asking whether a steak dinner is better than a lobster dinner. They both satisfy, they're both pleasing, but they are inherently different. The two composers never met and never had a chance to discuss their artistic differences. However, Wagner, a man of definite ideas as well as ego, would probably have made the discussion more a monologue. Neither had anything good to say about the other. Verdi on Wagner. He chooses unnecessarily the untrodden path, attempting to fly where a rational person would walk with better results. Wagner on Verdi. It would be best not to say anything. Giuseppe Verdi's father was a landowner and innkeeper, his mother a spinner of yarn. His father became aware of his son's interest in music, and when the composer was 7, purchased an old spinet for him. His talent manifested itself early on, and at age 10, he attended a music school in Busseto, a small town about 20 miles northwest of Parma. Within 2 years, he was made the assistant conductor of the Busseto Orchestra. At age 20, he left the music school, hoping to enter the Milan Conservatory. However, since he was 2 years beyond the age limit for entry, he pursued independent studies. And like the composer Gluck almost 100 years before him, Verdi discovered opera in Milan. Verdi returned to Busseto, and after his marriage to one of his music students, he began composition. Then tragedy struck. His infant daughter died suddenly in 1838. followed by the death of his infant son in 1839. Months later, in 1840, his wife died. He had limited success with his first opera, Oberto, but with the failure of his next opera, Un Giorno di Regno, and with tragedy overwhelming his life, he vowed to give up composition. However, he was persuaded to try one more opera, and Nabucco, from its opening night success, made Verdi famous. Verdi was an astute political animal, successfully steering his way through the minefields of censors, the large part of Italy being under Austrian rule at the time. While his works were never politically revolutionary, his name was used as a slogan, Viva Verdi, as the rallying cry for United Italy under Vittorio Emanuele, Re d'Italia, V-E-R-D-I. And although he was elected a member of the Chamber of Deputies in 1861, he resigned in 1865, concentrating his energies on composition. In 1869, the Suez Canal was to be completed, and with the building of the canal came other building projects in Cairo, including a new opera house. Verdi had been asked to write an ode for the new opera house, but turned down the commission. Why did he need to write the celebratory piece of music when opening night was to be his own Rigoletto? However, he was again approached in early 1870, but turned it down again. But when he was told that the new commission would go to either Charles Gounod, the composer of Faust, or even possibly Richard Wagner, he quickly changed his mind and signed the commission agreement in June 1870. The opera was to be Aida. Verdi was as shrewd a businessman as he was a composer. After consenting to the commission, he laid down some very specific stipulations. He would pay for the libretto, thereby having complete ownership and control over it. He would pay for someone to travel to Cairo to rehearse and conduct the opera, thereby having complete control over the production. He would grant rights only in the Kingdom of Egypt, thereby retaining the worldwide rights to both the libretto and the music for himself. At the time of the commission, he had received a scenario entitled The Fiancée of the Nile by Auguste Mariette, an archaeologist and Egyptologist. He began to work with his librettist, Antonio Ghislanzoni, and while he did not write the libretto himself, he was totally involved in the adaptation, changing the lengths of poetic lines and even the wording in certain places. By mid-1870, he was working on Act One and was even concerning himself with scenery, costumes, and Egyptian instruments. By November of that year, he had completed a draft of Act Four, except for the final duet between Radames and Aida. He wanted to avoid the cliched death scene and wrote to his librettist, "I should like to avoid the usual death agonies, like, I'm falling, I'm going before you, wait for me, she's dead, I'm still alive." When his librettist was late in sending him the verses for the final duet, he wrote them himself, the famous and poignant O Terra Addio, Farewell, O Earth. The January 1871 premiere was held up by the outbreak of the Franco-Prussian War and the Siege of Paris, where the sets and costumes were stored and held hostage. They could not be shipped to Egypt. However, on Christmas Eve, 1871, the world premiere of Aida took place in Cairo. For the La Scala premiere in 1872, Verdi made minimal changes. Aida was truly a grand opera, replete with mature melodic exuberance, the warmth and color of pageant and ballet, and the mighty choruses of the opera, all relating a story of human passion with drama instead of plot. Some historians believe that Aida was the culmination of Verdi's art up to this point. The opera had superb solo arias like Celeste Aida, the finale to Act Two with its pomp and splendor, and the closing scene to the opera as a climax of expressive and tragic poignancy. He used recurring themes, similar to the Wagnerian leitmotif, and employed exotic harmonies and chromatic intervals to propel the story of ancient Egypt. There are a number of operas which have been such war horses that elements of them are known to the opera illiterate, and the massive, extravagant past productions of Aida, with scores of animals, possibly elephants, and huge crowds marching across the stage, are ripe for parody. However, opera, in order to be grand, to be true drama and human passion instead of plot and caricature, needs certain elements to separate it from comic opera, Wagnerian music drama, and even opera verismo. That Aida and its stories of onstage elephants may be apocryphal and has entered the collective public consciousness, it still is an opera to admire. It certainly doesn't diminish the art in any way. We are just aware of it in a new light. Even Wagner's music dramas with their mythic characters and period costumes are ripe for parody and caricature. Who is not familiar with the Warner Brothers Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd cartoon What's Opera, Doc?, which portrays Elmer Fudd as Brunhilde with spear, breastplates, and horned helmet, singing to the melody of the Ride of the Valkyries, "Kill the Wabbit, kill the Wabbit." Do a simple Google search, and you'll find the entire 7-minute cartoon on the web. In May 2010, Opera Today went out of its way to state, "Elephants were pointedly banned from this new production of Aida." Even a November 23, 2007 report on National Public Radio about the Houston Grand Opera's production of Aida specifically mentions Act 2, Scene 2, that with the spectacle of Radames' triumphant return with his army, if a production of Aida involves elephants, here is their moment in the spotlight. In a November 5, 2000 story in the New York Times, Craig S. Smith reported on a production of Aida in Shanghai, China. The cast of 2,200 included 1,650 People's Liberation Army soldiers and a trained elephant. Smith described the triumphal march. "This production featured Chinese soldiers dressed as Egyptian warriors, marching in formation across the massive stage and around the stadium's oval track, more befitting the opening of the Olympic Games than a 3-hour opera. They were followed by an elephant, Bactrian camels, lions, tigers, and racing horse-drawn chariots. The elephant drew the biggest applause of the evening when it stood on its hind feet and waved a forefoot to the crowd. A soldier frantically swept into a dustbin a trail of road apples that the horses left behind. Said one Chinese attendee, "I'll bet you haven't seen anything as grand and expansive as this. And when it comes to grand opera, it cannot get any better than Verdi's Aida." This is Aaron Isquith wishing you good listening.